It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 209. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined by Jerem Jordan of BYU TV. We talk about the struggling offense for the football team and then any worries he might have after the loss by the men's basketball team to Long Beach State. Matt and I then recap our trip to Kansas City. We preview Fresno State. And then just how worried are we about the men's basketball team? This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and listen to us yak right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Jerem Jordan, welcome back.
Congratulations on 5 years. That's one of the great things about your podcast, is that you guys are consistent. And so 5 years now, that's amazing.
That is, it's actually kind of crazy, but I mean, we have people that are not related to us that listen to the podcast.
I mean, that's kind of the goal.
That is kind of the goal.
Family, they don't end up caring in the end. And then you try and get to other people, and then you're like, all right, sweet, we've made it.
No, at this point, I think family have all dropped off. They get enough of us. The wives.
That's what happens.
Only listen if we say, oh, you have to listen to this. It was cool. And even then, I'm not 100% sure that they do. We've got listeners and people that like what we do, so we'll keep doing it. And by doing that, of course, I'm going to ask you about, I can't remember last time if the Star Wars trailer had come out or not when you and I spoke.
I don't think so. No, it hadn't.
Okay, so on our usual scale of 0 to Ty Detmer, 0, of course, being 0, Ty Detmer being the most excited you could possibly be, Jerem Jordan, how would you rate yourself on that scale?
I don't want to let myself get to Ty Detmer, but I'm extremely excited. I've gobbled up, you know, every TV spot, every interview I could find, everything. I haven't gone to the force.net, yet. I haven't pushed it to that degree, but very excited. It looks really good, you know, and I've been reading things and watching the movies again, and it's been fun to kind of get back into that.
Yeah, I've been watching the movies again, which reminds me why the prequels aren't my favorite, though I don't think they're as bad as some people say, but, you know, I think for a lot of fans, as long as it's not as bad as what they think the prequels were, people will be fine.
Oh, well, listen, all we need is for The Force Awakens to be as good as Star Trek.
Yes.
Because these characters and the story is so rich that it will be better than that because we're invested in those characters, you know. If you're a Trekkie, if you're a Star Wars, whatever. It's going to be good. It's going to be a good movie. It's just how good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, well, now we have to talk about depressing things after leaving something exciting. Let's start with football, Jerem. The Missouri game, Matt and I were there in person.
Yeah, how was it?
Kansas City's awesome. I'd recommend that even when there's not a football game. Lots of things to do. Food's awesome.
New Jerusalem, baby.
Yeah, that's right. You're close. I was a little disappointed they didn't do a alumni tailgate at the stadium. They did it like out in Independence or something. I don't know. We didn't get to eat free burgers or anything, but other than that, it was pretty cool. And the Arrowhead Stadium was cool. I mean, I'd rather always be on campus personally, but I also understand that for these players, playing in an NFL stadium is a big deal. So that's cool, But the game itself, Jerem, kind of played out how I thought it would. I think a lot of fans were very disappointed. As you look back on that game, what was the thing, good or bad, probably bad, that stuck out to you as far as what happened in that loss?
Just big plays and opportunities missed. Big picture, BYU could have seized the moment. You know, Missouri was kind of unsure of itself. Were they going to rally? Were they emotionally ready, you know, for all that? There was a lot going on. And then BYU did not get pushed around. Just made mistakes at critical times. Adam Hine fumbles on a drive that's going to yield points. Tanner Mangum coughs it up inside BYU's own 20. Michael Davis has a pass interference call in the end zone that when a pass is picked off, that ended up being 7 points. Cy Tautu later that drive, targeting, yields a first down on third down. Those four plays really stuck out to me. I thought BYU played good enough, just good enough to lose, as Spencer Hadley said it. on our show earlier this week.
Yeah.
And it was frustrating because that's a 4-5 Missouri team that's arguably the worst offense in the country, and BYU loses that game. I knew Missouri's defense was good. We all knew that, but they were really good. And BYU, a couple plays here or there, Mitch Matthews can't quite hang on to one. We see the replay, wow, face mask, you know. The officiating was a little odd. Both teams benefited. But it's a disappointing loss because 7-3 is a good record, but the expectation had kind of changed to where 8-2 and ranked, all right, we can come down the backstretch, maybe get to 10 or 11. And now that has dithered a little, even though BYU will win this weekend to get to 8. And then I think they'll win in Logan to get to 9, and then we'll see what bowl game and what matchup that is. But 9 wins against a tougher schedule versus, 8 the last couple of years. And I think 2013 schedule is actually tougher than this when all said and done. But
yeah, it's looking
yeah,
that way.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, I think this schedule didn't turn out to be as good as maybe we thought at the beginning of the year because Missouri,
no.
Boise were not as good as we thought.
Nebraska.
Even Nebraska.
Cincinnati.
Even Cincinnati, who I thought would be like one of those, oh, that could trip you up in the middle of the year. They weren't really good enough to do that. It turned out San Jose State was almost good enough to do that. But 2 weeks in a row, one was against a really good defense, as you pointed out. One was against what wasn't a good defense. But this offense has been kind of hit and start. We're not go fast, go hard anymore. I'm not exactly sure, Jerem, what this offense is besides throwing the ball deep. Do you think there are problems on the offensive side, or do you think, no, San Jose State, 3 offensive linemen were hurt or suspended, and against Missouri, that was the second-best defense we've played all year?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely point at those and make a strong case there. But I do have concern offensively because BYU rushes the ball 15 times. And they weren't rushing it effectively, but the last 2 games combined, BYU has 82 yards rushing. When BYU can't run the ball, they don't do well. And BYU survived San Jose State, and then Missouri wins. You only put up 16. You put up 17 and then 16. That's not good. The pillar is 24, and BYU should be able to put up more. They had been putting up a bunch of points. All of a sudden, BYU leaves Provo and can't find the mojo. I think they'll get that back against Fresno State, who is terrible. And then at Utah State, it's an interesting game because they're 5-5, but they're 4-0 at home. So I'm not sure what to think about that. The offensive line certainly has played into that. All 5 of those starters played on Saturday against Missouri, but they're not the same. There's just an issue there. And maybe no Jamal Williams, no Taysom Mills catching up to BYU in the run game. I have some concerns there because the receivers are good. I think Tanner Mangum is overachieved, but if he can't run the rock, he can't get first downs, he can't use time, he can't keep the defense off the field and rested, and then ultimately that was BYU's doom, was lack of enough possessions, and then the defense having to defend 20 third downs, I guess to their credit to force third downs, but they converted, 13 of those?
Yeah,
that ended up being an issue that, to me, stemmed from not being able to run the ball.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, they ran 80-something plays. We ran, 50-something plays. So that's the defense was out there a long time. And unfortunately for us, Missouri may have figured some things out offensively. Having watched them before, they did some things against us they had not done before in the run game, loading it up and doing some of that some of those kind of zone blocking run scheme that they hadn't done in at least the games I had seen, and their quarterback was at least better than he had been in the past. Bronson Confusi has a huge game. I know the announcers, I of course didn't listen to them, but from what I heard that Brent Musburger and Jesse Palmer were talking about him a lot, do we have an elite at this point defensive player in Bronson Confusi?
I think so. I mean, in this game, he had his greatest game as a Cougar. I know he had a couple of sacks against Cincinnati, but this was his best game because it was on a stage that was bigger. It's against an SEC team. Granted, that offense stinks, but Bronson Confusi took advantage of the moment. And Brent Musburger was saying things like, he could start for Alabama. He might as well stay here and suit up for the Chiefs. Run the other direction. Bronson took advantage of the moment. I think that will hopefully yield some money on his end when all is said and done.
Yeah, he I'll tell you, our section was mostly Missouri fans where we were sitting, and they were screaming at their coach every time the ball ran towards Kafusi. 90's good, stop running it that way. They're screaming at the top of their lungs, so they definitely saw it, what Musburger saw. One last thing before we move off of that, just kind of looking forward. You already said, think the victory against Fresno State, probably a victory against Utah State, and then it's hard to project who the bowl opponent will be at this point because the Pac-12's a bit of a mess as far as where people will land and if we're even playing a Pac-12 team, depending on what bowl we end up in. So looking forward out, let's say they do win out, say they win whatever the bowl game is too. Is this a success with a freshman quarterback, or do you look back because of missed opportunities against UCLA and Missouri? Do you look back and go, yeah, it's a freshman quarterback and all, but man, you were close to having a really special season.
If BYU wins 10 games, I don't care who the quarterback is, that's a really good season. And if you tell me that's a freshman quarterback, a true freshman, I go, are you nuts? 10 would be amazing.
Yes,
10
it
would
would.
be unbelievable because that might yield a ranking for BYU to finish the season. That might yield a preseason rank. I'm talking best case scenario here. Because if you win 10 games and you return the quarterback, you're going to be on the fringe, if not in, of the postseason top 25. And then ultimately the preseason top 25. That would be awesome. To me, 8 was going to be a good number this year, even with Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams. The schedule didn't play out like we thought, so maybe that number needs to bump up to 9, 9.5. I don't know. But if BYU finishes with 9 wins, I think, okay, you build off that. If they finish with 10, wow, overachievement given the injuries, the suspensions, the inexperience, all the went into that. I think that would be a tremendous, tremendous number at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think most fans do, though, at least the ones that are vocal on Twitter right now. It's fire Bronco again, and Navy coach is good, hire him. I love how they
People would
project all
complain
this.
about 10 wins. The standard's too high. Do we
Yes.
realize the kind of players we get and the certain depth that we have and the we're doing it with one arm tied behind our back with the honor code and we're scheduling up and we're playing a lot of these on the road. I mean, see what it is and then create an expectation. I have a real issue with BYU fans thinking this. We're going to put more weight on the bar when we go to lift the schedule stronger, yet we're going to get the same amount of reps, wins. That
Right.
does not equate. That
Yeah.
does not equate. BYU's trying to do something harder in hopes that one magical season turns into, say, a New Year's Six. And it's more appealing as a Power 5 invite. BYU's trying to look hot, and it's tough because the degree of difficulty is higher.
Yeah, and just as a frame of reference, in Lavelle's last 10 seasons, he had 2 seasons when he won more than 10 games, 10 or more. So, I
That's saying
mean,
a lot.
that's saying a lot, and that was against, quite frankly, much lesser schedules than Broncos playing right now. One last thing, because you said it and it sparked something in my head. Jerem, who's the quarterback next year? Is Taysom Hill the quarterback if he's healthy and gets a waiver and comes back? Is Taysom Hill even going to be in BYU? If you had to project today, who starts that first game against that even tougher schedule in 2016.
I don't have any super inside knowledge. It's just maybe what I want. I want Taysom Hill to start against Arizona at the University of Phoenix Stadium. Ohio State has needed two quarterbacks this year to stay undefeated, to be good, to be the team that they are, right? It would be the best thing ever if Taysom Hill came back. It would. He's a once in a generation athlete. I know that keys to the car have been handed over to Tanner Mangum, but guess what? He could have 2 more seasons starting, and he would have 3, which was the goal anyway. Next year could be what we thought this year was going to be. And you figure it out. Maybe you need both. Taysom Hill might get injured again. I don't want that to happen, but you might as well have Tanner Mangum ready to go. Taysom Hill is too good of an athlete, too unique of an athlete. And by the way, against Nebraska, he was pacing for a 400-yard total offense game. He was going to blow that up, and BYU was going to win that by double figures. He is so special, and to think that you want to hand it over to Tanner Mangum already, to me, is a little naive. I think that you need to milk the cash cow for what it is, which is Taysom Hill, incredible athlete. Tanner Mangum will have his time, and it's soon. Maybe it's next year. Maybe Taysom Hill decides to go somewhere else or just give it up. I don't know, but I want Taysom to come back really bad.
Well, and this year, I mean, it's easy to say this in retrospect, but this year we probably only have one loss with Taysom and Jamal.
I haven't even gone there because it would hurt too
it
much.
It hurts too much.
I'm serious. I haven't gone there. I haven't broken the geek down game by game. I don't want to.
No, we probably shouldn't. There's nothing good can come from that. So speaking of nothing good, we're recording this on Tuesday night. Late this morning, Long Beach State, I don't want to say, I would say stunned. I mean, they weren't supposed to be a good team. We probably don't know how good of a team they are yet, and maybe later in the year this loss doesn't feel or look as bad as it does. But I got two things that to ask you about, Jerem. Do we need to be worried about this team's ability to shoot free throws? Is this going to be a recurring theme all year?
I don't think so. I think that Kyle Collinsworth had an off night. I wonder if he put as much effort into free throw shooting during the summer when he didn't have to rehab. Maybe he worked on his jumper more. I'm not sure. But who was shooting the free throws? Like, Chase Fisher wasn't getting to the line. Nick Emery wasn't getting to the line. Jake Julesen wasn't getting to the line. So that was one of the problems. Kyle Davis wasn't, you know, to a great degree. So I'm not overly concerned about that in the long term.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that in the long term based on who shot them. But then I want to go positive because if you want negative, you can find it on Twitter and other places about that loss. But looking at Kyle Davis, good and bad, I mean, he's had two pretty good games, but there's been a lot of turnovers. I think that'll go down. But, you know, between him and Collinsworth, there were 13 turnovers. That's not likely to happen again. But as you look at this team in two games in against not the greatest opponents, is which newcomer are you most excited about at this point?
Kyle Davis. He's been fantastic. I think that I had been saying during the summer that he was a 9-6 guy at Utah State, but he's a rebounder and he can score on the inside, and that's going to be big for BYU. He had foul trouble, otherwise he has an even better game than a 10-9, and that was kind of secondary to Corbin Cafusi's career night as well. As the Cafusi boys go off, 2 out of 3 days, that's pretty good. Davis, definitely the one. I think Nick Emery is going to be a stud, but it's going to take a little bit of time just for him to figure out his role on this team. He's an alpha male personality, but there are already two alpha males on this team with Collinsworth and Fisher. And he had an off night as well. Emery and Fisher combined for, what was it, 2 of 15 and 4 points, 0 of 8 from the 3. I mean, you just had all this stuff that's not going to happen again at the same time. 24 turnovers, 8 of 21 from the free throw line, 5 of 20 from 3. All this stuff, you know, it was bad. It was a nightmare. And, you know, it's game two. There are 29 regular season games left. Is it concerning? Yes. Does it mean BYU's not going to the tournament? Come on. You can't say that this soon.
No. You can't say anything like that this soon because we'll all be jumping up and down if they, say, split with Gonzaga during the season or in Maui have a good showing. I mean, it's way too early now. Of course, you said there's some concern. The other piece, the last thing I'll get you out on, Jerem, is so we've got, you know, the bigs. We've got Chase Fisher and maybe Nick Emery being the guy that comes in sometimes to provide that spark off the bench. Once again, 1-1. One game Chase Fisher is productive. One game he isn't, as was the theme last year. When he's not productive, we struggle. Is that going to be, do you think that's just how this team is built? Or do you think, like you said, you know, him and Emery aren't likely to have off nights again on the same night? Is this team constructed such that once you think they hit their flow, Fisher can have that 1-for-7 shooting night and BYU can still win?
Yeah, I felt before the season that BYU would be better this year because they would get to the point with some of these young guys like Emery and now Davis and others like an Ates or a Chapman or a Toulson that would pick up the slack. Now, it's early. It was Nick Emery's first road game. It was Jake Toulson's second start, first start on the road. There are only 4 upperclassmen on this team. There's 1 junior, Kyle Davis, and then 3 seniors, Collinsworth, Fisher, and Austin. So this is a young group that's still trying to figure it out. And when you have Kyle Collinsworth and Chase Fisher get in foul trouble, all of a sudden you hand over the keys to freshmen and sophomores in the backcourt, mostly freshmen. And mistakes happened. So it's going to take a little while, but I think you know, in, I don't know, 10 games, 15 games, that if Chase Fisher has an off night, the BYU won't necessarily lose that game because they'll have more experience, more depth. And I think Nick Emery will be the one that will pick up the slack.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we'll find out. I mean, Nick Emery's, I mean, he's fresh off the boat, if you will. There's a lot of time left for him to get into the college game and prove what he can do. Well, Jerem, thank you for joining us on our fifth anniversary. It's been good to have you on, and of course, we will have to have you on after The Force Awakens comes out to discuss
on
the podcast. I've already told Matt we're going to dedicate a whole podcast to it. He thinks that's ridiculous, but I'm the guy that edits them, so it's not very hard for me to do it.
Yeah, no, you do what you want. You're the boss, you know?
Exactly. All right, Jerem, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, and congrats on 5 years.
So, Matt, CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout podcast. I would like to take you back in time.
A little way back machine here?
Way back machine. So, going back in time about 5 years, all right, you and I were having a conversation. And if I'm getting any of the details of this wrong, you won't remember because your memory's terrible. But
That's about right.
And about a little over 5 years ago, we flirted with the idea of...
Do you have to use the word flirted?
Does that bother you, the word flirted?
I guess I'll wait and see where this story is going.
Okay, so you and I talked about starting a BYU sports podcast. Okay? We just kind of joked around about it, and eventually I said, let's do it, and you said, let's do it. And our first episode was November 15th, 2010.
Wow.
We had 53 people listen to our podcast, that first one.
That's crazy, though. That's crazy.
That you even got 53. Because remember how stoked we were when we got 53?
We're like, there's people we don't know that probably listen to this.
Yes, yes. And then we got our first one over 100 a few weeks later. We had our first guest not till January when Jay Drew, an old friend of mine, and of course, the sports writer for the Salt Lake Tribune came on. And then we really didn't, we kind of were hit and miss. You know, we were doing like two times a month-ish. And then for football season for 2011, we, with independence and everything, we ramped it up. And that's when things kind of started taking off. And of course, you and I, you have been on all but three episodes, I believe, when I was counting this.
That's crazy.
Three of the 209 episodes, you were not there. The other 206, you were. And you had good reasons for missing all the ones that you did. And here we are, Matt, 209 episodes, 5 years later. Any grand thoughts for the listeners?
I just can't believe we're still doing this 5 years later.
No, I think the over-under, if you had set it on 6 months, most people would have taken the under.
I would have taken the under.
What?
We'll go through a football season and see how it goes. Next thing you know, it's been 5 years, and my wife's like, you're still doing this?
Yes. The answer is yes. That is correct. We are still doing this. And sometimes it's... We've both
moved during that period of time. I've moved twice.
You've moved twice since this started. I've moved once. How many children combined have we had in the last 5 years? Just
2010. I've had two.
You've had two.
Yep.
I've had one. So we've had three combined children. We've lived in a combined five different states. Well, actually not five different. No, yeah, because I was in Wisconsin. So five different states. That's a lot. But we had our first of an experience this weekend, Matt, in Kansas City. We were there at the game. Anybody that follows us on Twitter saw our mass consumption of delicious barbecue.
There was so much barbecue. It was so good.
Oh, man. It was so good. And I felt a little sick the next day driving back to Minneapolis. But
I felt sick just because I was missing the barbecue.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But we also were stopped by a listener for the first time in the streets of Kansas City.
It was pretty cool.
Ryan Mortensen, that's at Ryan Mortensen 04 on Twitter. He stopped us, and we just were chatting as BYU fans stopping on the road, and he goes, "Wait a second, aren't you the podcast guys?" Huh, look at us 5 years later. Somebody stopped us on the street. We should have made T-shirts or something, man, and like told everybody about our podcast.
We should have had T-shirts to wear at the game. We totally should have done that.
That seems like a miss with our new logo.
We could have given him a T-shirt.
We should have, like, just carried T-shirts around in our pockets to hand them out to listeners.
We should have gotten one of those T-shirt guns. We'd have been firing T-shirts at people on the streets of Kansas City.
I'm sure the Arrowhead staff would have loved that. So, Matt, your favorite part of our trip to Kansas City?
Top Golf, because I destroyed you.
Oh, my gosh.
Other than the game, yes.
We'll get
destroying
to the game
you in Top Golf was my highlight.
I don't remember that.
Oh, really? I've got the picture of the scoreboard.
I'm pretty sure that was doctored. There's something
366 to 110, I think was the score.
That sounds ridiculous. That can't be accurate.
That sounds about right.
You always say you're terrible at golf.
You're right. I was wrong. It was 366 to 106.
Stop.
I spotted you 4 extra points. Sorry.
Stop. You're ridiculous. You can hit the ball off the tee.
Yes.
Now,
yes,
I'm not sure you can chip, but...
My chip game is terrible.
My chip game is usually okay. It was terrible that night on Top Golf. I believe every city needs a Top Golf. I looked into franchising opportunities. They do not franchise.
We got to figure that out. You need a Top Golf. I'll pay you. I've got one that's about 25 golf. Minutes away.
Yeah, I need a Top Golf because I've now been to Top Golf in Northern Virginia and Kansas City. When I next visit you, I'm sure we will go in the Houston, Texas area. But my favorite part was actually the Negro League Baseball Museum, followed closely by the barbecue.
The baseball museum was pretty cool.
And we went to the World War I Museum, which was also, I mean, we didn't even finish going through it. We should have built more time. I didn't realize how big it was.
It was gigantic.
It was cool.
But there was so much stuff in the Negro League Baseball Museum that we spent a little more time there than I think we had anticipated.
Yep.
There was just a lot of good stuff to read.
Yeah, that is a great museum. Highly recommend if you're a baseball fan and you're in Kansas City to do that. And if you're a history buff, the World War I, and both of us are history guys, but I just don't know a ton about World War I. So it was actually pretty cool. It was a lot of new information. The Negro League Museum was new, but I've been a fan of that piece of baseball history for quite some time, learning about those players. So Kansas City was good to us, man.
It was good.
Kansas City was good to us, I have to say. So, Matt, let's jump into CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, women's soccer beat Utah Valley in Provo and South Field this past weekend. They will play, we're recording this on Tuesday evening, they will play Thursday night at Stanford, a one seed in the tournament and a team that they lost to earlier this year. Good luck to the women's soccer team. I hope they absolutely kick the crap out of that tree.
You hate Stanford.
It's true. Stanford and San Diego State. You want to get me pumped up? I don't care if we're playing. It doesn't matter what sport we're playing them in. I want them to be destroyed. Absolutely destroyed. So, sticking with the women's sports, Alexa Gray was named Player of the Week nationally. And, of course, a couple of victories within WCC play. A couple more WCC matches coming up this weekend for the women's volleyball team. They are ranked, I believe, 12th in the country right now and playing well. So hopefully this will lead into a deep tourney run. Other than that, that's all I've got for Cougars in the News. We can jump right into football, Matt.
Here we go.
So your top takeaway from the game Saturday against the Missouri Tigers?
We gave up, what was it? What was the final total yardage that we gave up?
440,
434 yards?
Yeah, yeah.
We gave up 434 yards against what might be, up until last weekend, the worst offense in major college.
In major college football.
And we gave up 434 yards. So that makes me wonder a little bit about the stability of the defense. When I look at what happened there and you look at a couple other things this season, maybe the defense isn't as good as we thought.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt, and I'm going to give you some stats to back up your little thesis, okay? So defense last year, which we all agreed was not a very good defense, okay? 4.96 yards per play. Now, they were facing more plays per game last year because of our tempo as well as our opponents. This year, the defense is at 5.2 yards per play. We're about the same against the pass. We are the 4.5 yards against the run would be, if it stands by the end of the year, and it's probably going to come down because of Fresno State and Utah State, but if it stands at 4.5, that will be the worst yards per carry defense. And I take out sacks, by the way, in case you're looking at another page somewhere else on the internet. That would be the worst rushing defense in Broncos tenure as coach. Now, a lot of that is UCLA, right? I mean, that was a massively bad game, right? And I get that, you know. But it counts, right? You don't get to toss it out just because it was a really bad day. We gave up 8 yards. But a few other games, 5.5 to Michigan. You know, let's see, 5.28 to East Carolina. You know, it's not a great run defense, unfortunately, this year.
Yeah.
My key takeaway, Matt, was the same, and stupidity. My key takeaway is stupidity. A terrible pass interference in the end zone, which ended up in an interception, and if Davis doesn't, now that one's not stupid, that was just a mistake. But the roughing the passer targeting call, I don't know what to say. That was one of the dumbest plays I've ever seen.
That may be the play of the game.
I think it was
such a crucial moment in the game, you know, to give them another set of downs point with the score and where they were on the field. I mean, that just it killed us, crushed us.
Yeah, it was a massive play. Now, you never know what would have happened if you reverse that. Of course, the fumble by Tanner is also was also big and led to a touchdown. All self-inflicted wounds. I will say the O-line played a lot better on pass protect than I thought they were going to. They did give up that one sack, but that was the only sack, and he had time quite often. He had time quite often, Tanner did. So,
yeah, he did, but at the same time, I mean, were we 3 of 10 on third down?
Yep.
And, you know, you look at how many 3 and outs there were, 4 times we went 3 and out. Yep. Then you have another drive where you fumble on the first play. You know, it's really hard to win football games. If, you know, and I think the other thing I wanted to get to as far as takeaways was, offensively, if we don't gain 3 or 4 yards on first down, the way Anai's calling this offense, you're done.
It's true.
You might get one first down, but you're not going to get the second one. Those first down plays are crucial. Because if he gets into a second and long situation, it's like we don't have a play for that. And forget third and long, because we're in trouble in a third and long situation.
Well, I think
that was definitely exposed Saturday night.
You and I had a good view because of our seats to see coverages and patterns. We run a lot of plays in which no receiver turns to look at the ball until they're 8, 9, 10 yards away, where not a single receiver is available as a quick hit, as an outlet if the rush is coming. Now, I get it on those designed rollouts. That's probably okay. It probably makes sense, right? Because he's not going to throw as he's turning to roll out. But on those design dropbacks, it'd be okay if somebody besides Peck ran a route under 10 yards. To your point about a second and 10 play, isn't a good second and 10 play a little dump off to a back? I will say Bernard's use and Peck's use in the passing game give me a little bit of hope. You know, Bernard had 4 catches, Peck had 3. And is that what, like, we've now completed 4 passes to tight ends so far this year?
I was fascinated by the use of Peck in this game.
Yes.
Absolutely blown away.
Yes.
You know, I completely unexpected. It's weird. I'm almost uncomfortable with it. Is there something wrong? Why are we doing this all of a sudden when we haven't been doing this really for years?
Well, and the other thing that caught me off guard is that a couple times when we did go short, there were like these kind of like speed plays to Mitch Matthews. I got nothing against Mitch. He's not a speed guy.
Nope.
Like those like speed, like get him the ball in space. That's not his game. Like that's what you do maybe for Blackman. Actually, let me back up. Our biggest problem on offense, Matt, is we don't have a speedy wide receiver. I think that's our biggest problem right now. Nobody can just break away from their guys. Nobody's got that. If you've got good defensive backs like Missouri or Michigan did, they just don't break away. And Mangum then has to be so precise with his route, with his passes, because the receivers, if they're open, the window is very small. Should we have run the ball more? 15 carries.
You know,
14
I'm not
if you take out the sack.
I'm not as a rule, and we talked about this the other night, but I'm not as a rule convinced that you have to have a balanced attack. I think you focus on what works, you do the things that work, and you go with that. Running the football, especially between the tackles against this team, it just wasn't gonna happen. You know, you look at what was happening with our offensive line and the size and skill of those defensive linemen. There was just it just wasn't going to go. So if we were to run the ball more, I think you'd have to be doing different kinds of things. You know, you get Juergens on a fly sweep, or you know, something where you're you know pulling a guard or something, and you're sending somebody off tackle. But running the ball in between the tackles, I don't think we really should have put much effort into that at all Saturday night.
I thought the same thing watching the game, and then I came back and watched some highlights and looked at the stats, Matt. The running game actually wasn't as bad as you remember it. And I think we didn't give it enough. I'm going to disagree with you. I think we didn't give it enough. Here's the other bizarre thing. We ran 56 plays on Saturday night, okay? Our defense was out there a lot. We have not run that few plays since 2010. Offensively in a game. I thought the offense did okay against Missouri, about what I expected. The problem was we weren't on the field enough. You talked about the third downs, did us in a couple of three and outs. But also, there's no tempo to this offense anymore. We are now a slow offense.
Well, and they held the ball. I mean, they had the ball for... They had the ball twice as long as we did. You look at time of possession in the first quarter, we had the ball for 3.5 minutes, and they had it for 11.
Yep.
And a half. Well, depending on how you round it off or if you want to make it even. But, you know, say 4 minutes and 11 minutes. I mean, they dominated in time of possession in every quarter except for the third quarter. And the third quarter was the drive where we held the ball for a longer period of time, went down the field, and then fumbled and gave it away.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Matt. 70 plays so far this year on offense. This would be the slowest offense again since 2010, which was a terrible offense. I don't know what happened to... I feel like we were go hard, go fast, and then now we're totally the opposite. And maybe it's because you have a freshman QB and you worry a little bit about some of that, but... You know, we saw one play, Matt, where they're sitting there setting it up. Mitch Matthews was uncovered. Missouri had screwed up. He was sitting out in the flat by himself. And Mangum, I don't know if he doesn't have the freedom, if he didn't see it, but that was a hike the ball, throw it to Mitch, and let him go. You know,
that would have been 6.
That would 6 or at least 10 or 15, right? If a defensive back or linebacker sees it as it's happening. Very fast. Gosh, that was frustrating. It was just frustrating. But I feel like I would want them to go up tempo sometimes. But Right now, we're not doing that.
But, you know, when they started putting together the Go Fast, Go Hard, you look at the personnel that were involved in that.
It's very different than now.
And there were two big features that make that work, and neither of them are on the field right now.
I know. It's sad, actually. It's one of the saddest things about this season. So, Matt, Bronson Cafusi, going back to the defense, he had a monster game. Cafusi had, what, 10 tackles? 3 for loss. He looked awesome. Have we now seen, scouts have been talking about NFL. I know he's had more sacks in a game, but I don't think I've seen him play a better game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 10 tackles, 3 for a loss, 2 forced fumbles. I mean, the guy's a beast. He's an NFL player.
Yes.
He will play at the next level.
Yes. And he looked really good in this game. And the crazy part about it is he had 10 tackles, 3 for loss, 2 forced fumbles in a game in which they were often game planning to go the other direction. I mean, he had a few tackles where he got the guy from behind coming from the backside of the play that defensive linemen typically don't make. Matt, on Twitter, we got a tweet bag question from Todd and D. He says, best part of Mizzou was watching Bronco destroy an SEC opponent. Where does he rank among D linemen in the Bronco era? Matt, where does Cafusi rank?
So who are the top D linemen in the Bronco era? Let's throw out a couple names to give ourselves some context here. So you have to put Ziggy on the list. I think he's better in the NFL than we expect him to be, but he was a very good player.
Okay.
Who else goes on the list?
Tui Loma. Even though he's on this team, I think he'd probably be on that list. Let's see. Kiesel was before Bronco, right?
Yep.
Kiesel was before Bronco. Let's see that list. I don't know, man. I'm trying to think who the other ones are, and I'm kind of drawing a blank. Kiesel was the one coming to mind, but of course he's not. He's not actually on that list.
So if you think about it in terms of guys that are going to play at the next level, he's top one or two.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think, you know, I don't know that we've had a lot of elite. You know, Keel was a linebacker, right? He's in the era, but he's a linebacker, but they did move him around. Ziggy is interesting, but again, you know, Ziggy, they kind of moved around, but he was technically a defensive lineman, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously he's doing extremely well at the next level. You know, Cafusi might be second behind him. Is that crazy talk?
I don't think so. I mean it's not, it's, there've been some good ones, right?
Yep.
But we're not talking about some illustrious list.
No, the linebacker list in Broncos' tenure has been much stronger than the
defensive. That's a little bit of a
line.
Different story.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
But, I'm looking through Jay Yeoman's best defensive players in BYU history, and Ryan Denny was a defensive lineman, but that's pre-Bronco.
Pre-Bronco.
We talked about Keel. Byron Frisch was a terrific defensive end that also was before
yep.
Bronco. Papinga played some D-line and played some linebacker. Maybe he deserves to be in the conversation. I think of him as a linebacker, though.
You got like Hebron Fangupo. He was good.
Fangupo was good.
He's bounced around a little bit in the league,
but he wasn't as good as Bronson is.
No, we like Romney Fuga, but he's not Bronson. He's not up in the Bronson Ziggy realm. I don't think even Ethan Manumaleuna was very good, but I don't think he's up in that realm.
I'd put him in that group just for his college play. Forget about the pros for a second.
Okay,
I would put him in that group of three, and of course the one we've missed is Jan Jorgensen. I knew there was somebody.
Oh, he is Bronco era, isn't he?
He is. He is. He is definitely Bronco era, and is probably for whole career, because Ziggy's career, of course, was short. He's probably the top. Now that I think about it, he would be the top. I do think that it's probably then. I think if you're just talking their college career, Bronson has to go in front of Ziggy.
Yeah, if you're just talking college career, that I agree.
Yes, and probably Mano Maliuna I'd put in front of Ziggy too, just on what they accomplished in college. But those are
so
probably.
Does that make him number one? Is that the answer to the question?
No,
he's the best one?
No, Jan Jorgensen's better. Don't you think?
Really?
I don't know. Jorgensen's stats are pretty impressive. Let's go to it. 221 tackles, 44 for loss, 30 sacks.
That 30 sacks is pretty good.
That 30 sacks is pretty good. Let's pull up Bronson's totals. This is an excellent question, Todd. But let's look at his total stat line. Let's see here. His total stat line for his career, he has fewer tackles, but that's okay. D-line isn't necessarily judged by tackles. He sacks is 22.5, which is not Jan Jorgensen's 30. So that's a little bit behind. Forced fumbles, he's had more. He does have two interceptions. Jorgensen didn't do the interceptions. And 36 tackles for loss, less than Jan Jorgensen's. I don't know. I don't know who I'd pick.
And that's close. I think you almost have to lean Jan there, but you got to remember, Bronson's story isn't done being written.
It isn't done being written, and he's played tougher opponents. That schedule during that part of the Bronco era was not filled with the kind of offenses that Bronson has played against in the last couple of years. I don't know. That'd be close, but I'm going to take Jan for now, and we could revisit that at the end of the year.
I'll tell you what, I am really excited to see Jan on the sidelines with this team, either way.
Yeah, and don't fight him on the streets if you see him. Don't do it.
Yeah, he will hurt you. He's a bad man.
He's a bad man. We didn't talk about the Ronda Rousey fight because we didn't see it, except for...
Are we still calling that the Ronda Rousey fight?
I don't even remember the other woman's name. So. Holly something, right?
Holly Holt or something,
yeah.
Whatever her name was.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Don't get kicked in the head by her.
Bad idea. So, Matt, before we leave the Missouri game, at the end of the half, you and I were flabbergasted. Our guest was flabbered. I don't even know what that means.
That sounds like something you need to visit a doctor
for. I'll talk to my I was going to say a kind of doctor. I'm not going to. What was with the double reverse flea flicker at the end of the first half?
What in the world was that?
We go from Doctor and I, no trick play Doctor and I, to at the end of a low-scoring first half, one of the slowest developing trick plays I've ever seen in my life. And in the end, it was okay because Mangum
Because
got
it
the
didn't
pass
result
on.
In a pick six, we're okay with it?
I'm saying the result was okay. I'm not saying I like the play call, but, you know, we all mock Anai, or mock maybe too strong. We give him a hard time for not doing trick plays, not being more creative. But then when he does, we hammer him. So I don't know if it's totally fair, but I thought the timing of that play was a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say. While I was watching the play develop, I was like, wait a minute, what? Is
You're
this
like,
really
I'm
happening?
I'm sorry, was that what?
Is this real life?
So, Matt, we're going to preview Fresno real fast, okay? Fresno's terrible, and we're
going to our preview will be as short as the competitive part of that game will be.
Yes, and I know people say, oh, San Jose State. They're worse than San Jose State. And I think after a close win and a loss, they're going to be highly motivated, plus I think the location being in Provo will help them a lot. You can see a definite difference throughout the year in this offense in Provo and away from Lavelle Edwards Stadium. So we'll do some quick over-unders, Matt, before we get to the final game. Final game stuff is over-under for the BYU offense, 6.2 yards per play. They have not broken that in several weeks, gone over six.
Under.
I'm going to go over. They're going to light it up. 4.1 yards per play for Fresno.
Under.
I'm going to take the under as well. Their offense is terrible. And I know we'll say so is Missouri's, but...
This is no Missouri.
Missouri had some athletes and hadn't put it together, and they finally, unfortunately, put it together against BYU.
They put it together all over BYU.
I think you're going to see a better Missouri offense from here on out. That's just my take on that. So Mangum, over under 335 yards passing.
Over.
I'm going to take the under just because I think he doesn't play the fourth quarter. Over under 2 touchdowns.
Over.
I'm going to take the over on that as well. Over under 0.5 interceptions.
Over.
I'm going to take the under. I don't think he throws a pick because
Tanner Mangum interceptions.
Tanner under. Mangum interceptions.
I was thinking defensive interceptions. My bad.
Oh, sorry. No, Tanner Mangum interceptions. This was the all Tanner predictions.
Okay.
So let's see here, Matt. I was going to go to the BYU page for this game to see what the over-under was.
The over-under is 56 points, and the spread is BYU by 26.
All right. So are you taking the points or are you taking BYU?
I'm taking BYU.
I'm taking the points. I don't think it's going to be over 26.5 points. I don't think the spread will be that far. And I'm going to take the under. Are you going to take the under or the over?
Actually, I'm going to take the under, and I'm probably also taking the points.
You're a waffler. You waffle.
You're a waffler.
So Matt,
I think that's going to be really close. I think that's a pretty good line.
I think so too. So Matt, bowl projections came out as ESPN's bowl projections by Mark Schlabach and Brett McMurphy have BYU playing in the Hawaii Bowl against Tulsa, says Schlabach, and McMurphy has Arizona. I don't think that is going to be the case.
Oh, how do you see it?
I think the Vegas Bowl is going to take a shot at BYU because it'll bring more people into the seats than any Mountain West team and potentially for their TV partner ESPN, a better rated game.
So then who do we get if we go to the Vegas Bowl?
If we go to the Vegas Bowl, I think, I don't know, some mediocre Pac-12 team. They have UCLA being the team that's in there. I don't think they will want a rematch of us and UCLA, though actually, as close as that first game was, maybe they would. But they typically don't like repeats.
Haven't we already done that before where we played UCLA a bunch in a row, including a bowl game? I feel like I've seen this movie.
I believe we have seen this movie before, but I don't think it'll be UCLA. I think it will be, I don't know, I'd have to look at the Pac-12 standings, which I don't have in front of me. I think it will be somebody else in the Pac-12. See? How's that for Nostradamus?
Yeah, well, I don't think they go for the BYU-UCLA rematch either.
No, I don't think they do. I'd say somebody like a Washington State. Heck, it could be Oregon.
That'd be fun.
Could be Oregon, Washington State, USC, Arizona State. If they go on a little run here towards the end of the year, they'll be bowl eligible. Heck, it could be California, though I don't think they'll they're already bowl eligible. Could be a lot of people. I don't think UCLA plays us in that bowl game. If it's not us, maybe they are the team that ends up in there. So, anywho, well, Matt, let's talk some hoops.
Hoops.
Oh, actually, before we go to hoops, one up, one down, college football. Who do you got one up in the college football rankings? Who moved for you upwards this week?
So for me, my one up is the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yes.
You know, big win at Baylor. I think they are my favorite coming out of the Big 12. I don't know how this all shakes out at the end for them as far as who gets into the top four. But for me, that's a team that I feel like is on the rise, is proving that they may belong.
Yeah, that makes this game, you know, Oklahoma State has to, in order to get into this, and they'll deserve it if they do, by the way. If they beat Baylor and Oklahoma, to finish the season. It looks like it's they're lined up to stay in the rankings, right? But I don't think they win both of those games, right? Don't you think they lose potentially both, Oklahoma State?
Yeah.
I think they could lose both. And then Oklahoma, I think, ends up in the top four. My one down, and then you can give your one down. My one down is actually Clemson.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. So they beat Syracuse by 10, okay? They still have to play Wake Forest and South Carolina. Let me give you a scenario before they reach the ACC championship game. How about they get beat by South Carolina? I don't think Clemson's that good. I think they're good.
South Carolina.
Really? Or they lose. What happens if they lose in the ACC championship? Who are you going to take, them or Oklahoma? I'm taking Oklahoma and their resume over. Who's Clemson beat this year? It's all based on how good you think Notre Dame is. Because Florida State's not that good. Right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Isn't it all based on, I mean, if you think Notre Dame's an elite team, then they've got two of these wins. But they're going to play, what, North Carolina in the championship game? Lottie freaking da. You know? And maybe North Carolina's better than I think, but I don't think so. And what if they lose to North Carolina? Then, of course, I think if they lose any more, they have to be perfect, I think. And I think other teams may not have to be perfect, as crazy as that sounds. Alabama does because they've got a loss. I think Ohio State could lose and still get in the four. I don't think Clemson can.
Clemson probably can't.
I think Ohio State could. Of course, Notre Dame is still lurking back there waiting for people to lose to sneak into that college football playoff. So, Matt, let's talk about basketball here real quick. Beat Utah Valley last night. Neither of us stayed up for it. Lost to Long Beach State, so I didn't watch the game. Looking at a box score, you did
listen,
watch it?
Don't we have to say neither of us got up early for it?
Yes, that's fair. I had to get on an airplane, and you have other things going on. Matt, how 0 to 100, how concerned are you about the team?
75.
That high?
Yeah.
I'm like 35.
Oh, I think this is a bad sign.
It's a bad loss. I don't know if it's a bad sign yet.
I don't know. You look at, granted, I'll admit I didn't get up and watch the game, and I haven't had a chance to watch it today, right?
Right. I have not either.
But just looking at the box score, it doesn't really feel like we were ever really in it.
Oh, come on. We lost you by know? A point.
Well, but we had to outscore them by 5 in the second half to get there.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and this is not a great team that they were playing. But you look at, like, the bigger concerns are free throws, okay? And Collinsworth turned into sophomore year Collinsworth and shot 4 for 9 from the free throw line, okay? He's going to shoot better than that. The three-point stuff, that just kind of comes and goes. And obviously, if Fisher and Emery combine 0 for 8, it's not going to be a good day. And we have 24 turnovers. I think all those things are fixable. Maybe the three-point one coming and going isn't, but turnovers and free throws, I don't think free throw is going to be that big. The turnovers, if they continue, you're absolutely right. It should be 75. But I'm not worried about their turning chances at this point. It's way too early. You sound, even though you're silent, you sound worried about their turning chances.
I am worried about the turning chances. In the second half, they went 1 for 9 from the arc.
So what? It's one game.
It's like the shooting is not, I don't know.
We had worse losses last year.
Free throws are terrible.
We had worse losses last year and ended up in the tournament. You know, all of this depends not on this loss. It depends way more on what we do in the coming weeks against better opponents.
I absolutely agree. And my anxiety level will come down as this team comes out and performs. But yes. Based on what I'm seeing from this game against Long Beach State, I've definitely got some concerns.
I'm not worried yet. Way too early to get worried. Young team, Only three upperclassmen, and one of them never played at four upperclassmen, I'm sorry, and one of them hadn't ever played at BYU yet, Kyle Davis. So I'm not too concerned. Next week, we will, of course, talk about Fresno. We will preview the Utah State game. We will likely talk something about the NFL because there'll be plenty of good NFL things to talk about as well. Matt, any other things before we sign off from our fifth anniversary episode?
Hey, happy anniversary.
That came out weird.
That was odd.
I
shouldn't have said that.
No, I wouldn't have said
that. Can you edit that out?
Nope. I will definitely be leaving that in. So definitely go out to CougarFan.com to get all of your Cougar sports news. You can check us out on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Check us out on Facebook, Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, which I'm shocked that was still available, by the way. We're doing something right here, man. We're doing something right. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
Unless your neighbors are Ute fans, you don't need to tell them.
No, don't tell them. Don't tell the Utes.